Hey, fate, will you take out the garbage?
There are so many little-known fairy tales, folklore stories, and chapters of history to explore in this world. So much of it is wackadoo! Unbelievable, disturbing, enthralling, mind-bending, and just plain weird. When I find these stories, they get stuck in my head, and I absolutely have to share them with someone. Usually I inflict these tales on my husband Dan, along with our chocolate lab Lily and cat Collins, but I thought, why not share these with you? I'm Gina Wagner. Welcome to Tail Wagging, a gleeful retelling of little-known fairy tales, folklore, history, and more. Today's episode of the Tail Wagging podcast is dedicated to Frady Cat. Frady Cat left us our second review on Apple Podcasts. It says, can't recommend highly enough. The modern commentary on some of the really messed up folklore is super fun. Even on the tales I'm aware of, so far just six swans. The take is fresh. Thank you, Frady Cat. And thank you to anyone who has left a review so far. We really need those reviews for people to find us, especially when the podcast is new. Thank you so much. If you have the time, please leave us one. And now onto the show. Welcome to another spooky episode of Tail Wagging for Spooktober.
Ooh.
Dan, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Now, what do you remember about our last episode? What was happening?
That he was gonna kill you! Stop going places with him! Stop flirting with him! Don't live in his house! Don't work at his businesses! He's going to kill you! You stupid! It's Chicago! Everybody's dying! All the time.
That's an excellent and succinct summary of part one.
Yeah, he built a murder house, and there's some fair going on, and he's going to kill, like, everybody who comes to the fair.
Maybe.
Like, all of them.
Maybe.
Nobody's getting out alive.
Possibly.
Okay.
Okay. So, a jeweler named Ned came to work for Holmes, and he moved in with his 8-year-old daughter, Pearl, and his beautiful, almost 6-foot-tall wife, Julia. Holmes gave her a job as his personal bookkeeper. Nothing bad can happen from this. Then, when her 18-year-old sister moved to Chicago, he hired her too. But things got funny. He paid these women a lot of attention, and customers started looking at Ned with pity in their eyes. Oh, Ned.
Did you know, Ned, that your name rhymes with dead?
One time, Holmes took Ned to the big vault. He stepped inside and he asked Ned to close the door and listen for the sound of his shouting. Ned didn't hear a thing. Holmes said, "Hey, how about we switch places? I want to check too. You go in the vault and shout." So Ned shouted and shouted. And just when he thought, this isn't funny anymore, Holmes opened the door and Ned hurried back to his apartment. It gave Ned the creeps. But why anyone would want a soundproof vault just didn't occur to Ned. So one day, the sister was crying and upset and took the first train she could to Iowa. Ned's best guess was that it had something to do with a man she was seeing. And then in Iowa, she fell ill and died. There's no proof that there's any connection to Holmes here. This just is something that happened.
It's just a thing that happened.
Yes. But now, with the sister gone, there's a lot of tension that's been building between Ned and his wife. They're arguing all the time, and Ned didn't feel like Julia thought he was enough in her eyes. Friends said something's going on between Holmes and Julia, but Ned was naive, and he just didn't see it. Ned actually admired Holmes for being so good at business at such a young age and really wanted Julia to look at him the way that she did at Holmes. So Holmes offers to sell Ned the pharmacy. Ned thought, this is my chance to impress my wife. And why would Holmes make me this offer if they're having an affair? This is great. But Holmes even wanted Ned to buy life insurance to protect Pearl and Julia if something happened to him. It would only cost $1 to start protecting his family forever. Ned didn't want it, and he offered to give the insurance man $1 just to go away. And then the creditors came knocking at the pharmacy. They wanted repayment for the mortgages that were taken out on the store's furnishings and stock. Ned didn't know anything about all this debt and thought they were trying to rip him off. And Holmes said, Ned, buddy, I assumed you knew stuff about business. Like, how'd you not know? Like, sale's final. You gotta figure out some business stuff now, buddy. And that was the last straw for Ned. He left. He left all of it. He left the pharmacy, he left his family, and he filed for divorce. He tried to get custody of Pearl, did not succeed. After Ned left, Holmes was less interested in Julia.
What?
Yeah. Like his other women, once the thrill of the chase was over, he just wasn't into it anymore. And then Julia told Holmes, I'm pregnant. Holmes promised to marry her, but only on one condition. If she would let him perform an abortion. See?
What?
He's a doctor. He's done this operation before. This is legit. He had chloroform. It's totally
chloroform.
Safe. Chloroform? Yeah, chloroform. He's got so much of it.
That's not anesthesia.
He's got a lot of chloroform.
It's not the same thing. It's not how that works.
This is so safe.
It's not how this works.
And when she woke up, she could be his wife. And they could have children later after construction's done on the hotel. Like, we just don't want to do that in the middle of this big project. Poor Julia, she doesn't really have a choice because, you know, going out on her own, disgraced, unmarried, and pregnant, just not really an option at this point in history.
But being alive is...
Being alive is always an option. So...
Until it's not.
Now, this, for me, is like one of the spookiest aspects of this whole story.
He's actually excited to do this, isn't he? Yeah, a lot? Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, God.
The operation was scheduled for Christmas Eve. That really bothers me a lot. So Julia tucked in her daughter, Pearl, and they talked about St. Nicholas coming to visit that night. And she went to the room that Holmes prepared for surgery. After saying goodnight to her neighbors, they talked about the plans they were going to make the next day. Then she went to that room. She lays down on the table. Holmes smiles at her, reassures her, puts a cloth over her mouth, you know, soaked in chloroform. He held on tight, and she struggled, and then was still. After that, he went to Pearl's room with another chloroform towel. Christmas morning, the neighbors waited for Julia and Pearl to come by. They were supposed to open up presents together under their tree, but they never showed up. When they asked Holmes about it, he said, they went to Iowa. The last time anyone saw Julia or Pearl was Christmas Eve, and all their belongings had been left behind in their apartment.
That's not good.
It's not really.
No.
It's about to get worse.
Oh, no.
Doctors at this time were accepting as many cadavers as they could get so they could learn more about the human body for science. Grave robbing was a thing. That happened. And they tried to look the other way. Holmes invited a man named Chappelle, whose specialty was articulating. That means stripping the flesh off bodies and reassembling the skeleton for display in doctors' offices and labs. Holmes showed Chappelle the body of a very tall woman. This didn't faze him because, well, Holmes is a doctor, so it's probably pretty normal for him to have a cadaver. it was completely opened up, Holmes said he'd been doing some dissection. And he offered Chappelle $36 to clean the bones and make a skeleton. And afterwards, Holmes sold the skeleton to a medical college for many times that price. He made a profit.
That's just sad.
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's really not good.
Oh my God. Okay.
Holmes' next conquest was a... Oh, Dan's head is in his hands now. His next conquest was a beautiful blonde 24-year-old named Emmeline that he hired to be his new stenographer. He'd buy her flowers and they rode bicycles together. And then one day, Ned, Julia's husband, showed up wanting to talk to Holmes. Holmes wasn't in. Ned took one look at Emmeline and the way she talked about Holmes and told her, "You should probably get away from him as quickly as possible." But she's in love. She's super in love with Holmes. Holmes told her he's the son of an English lord and that it's a secret. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Run.
he promised to marry her. They'd honeymoon in Europe and they'd visit his father, the lord. She knew he was good with money.
And yeah, as soon as we get done getting married in this special room he has upstairs, that's where we're getting married.
And she trusted him with her life savings. And one day she disappeared.
Yep.
Neighbor friends asked about her and he told a story. Oh, she went away to get married. He even showed them a printed wedding announcement with cryptic wording talking about how she had gone to meet her fate, quote unquote. Presumably her husband.
But, yeah, yeah, that's what you call it when it's your fate. Yeah, you call me fate all day. Hey, fate, will you take out the garbage?
Get your fate over here.
Very normal. Very normal, especially when we were engaged. You know, you call me up every day.
Hey, fate. How's it going, fate?
How is my fate today? Yeah. It's just normal. This is fine. This is all fine.
The day after Emmeline disappeared, Holmes asked some men to help him carry a large trunk downstairs, and he asked them to be careful with it. 3 years later, the police found a woman's footprint inside the vault. The theory was that Holmes had poured acid on the floor of the vault to hasten the consumption of oxygen. Emmeline was forced inside shoeless, possibly without clothing, and was locked inside the airtight compartment. And then another skeleton went to another medical college. He had started receiving letters from the parents of missing daughters, and private detectives were showing up at his door to ask questions. Emmeline and Julia's parents had hired private eyes to search for their daughters, but neither family thought he had anything to do with it. They wanted the names of friends and addresses, places to look next on the trail. And he's happy to oblige, and he tells them just how much it grieved him. He couldn't help more.
This is why it's always the husband or the boyfriend. This is why.
Well, now he needs a new secretary. He just can't find good help anywhere. It just keeps leaving. So he found it in Minnie Williams. She's different from the others. She's not a blonde bombshell. She's described as a little bit more plain, a little bit more short. But she is an heiress. She has an estate valued between $1.5 and $3 million in today money.
Why is she secretarying?
She likes him.
Right.
Yeah. Like, they originally met in Boston, and he had been going by the name Henry Gordon at that time, and she called him Harry. I don't know why this is a thing, but this is a thing. And he asked her to call him Henry Howard Holmes, which is an alias he used for business. He's like, you know, this is the name I use for business, so just, you know, make sure you call me this name in front of other people, right, honey?
In the ring, I'm Triple H. I am the game.
I think this is the best definition of the game. He's definitely the cerebral assassin. Wow. Just wow. I think you nailed that one.
Thanks.
But yeah, she's still allowed to call him Harry. So she manages his books and moves in. He asked her to marry him. They had a nice, quiet ceremony, just the two of them and the preacher. But nothing was ever filed, so the marriage didn't exist legally. It just was kind of a nice moment they got to have.
Sure.
And then he had her transfer the deed of land in Fort Worth to one alias of his, who then signed it over to an alias that his assistant Peitzel was using. So he gets her to sign over his land to fake him and then fake other guy.
And then her land to fake him?
Her okay. land. This is her okay. land that she inherited. And he also puts her name on a board of a fake business that held assets and was a reference for creditors. So Minnie is so happy. She writes to her sister Anna about the good news. Anna thought things were moving a little bit too quickly. Minnie told Anna about the land transfer, and Anna's pretty suspicious about that. Holmes said, "Hey, invite your sister to come stay with us. She can see the World's Fair. I'll pay for everything." And she pretty much has to accept because she needs to go see for herself, and it is generous that he's paying, so she's going to come. So, finally, World's Fair is going on. It's a big flippin' deal. His World's Fair hotel is open, and business is great. When men ask about accommodations, for some reason there's just no vacancies, and he will refer them to a nearby hotel. But somehow there is always room for women. And people also notice that the hotel often smelled like chemicals, but well, you can't think too much about it because the building did have a pharmacy. But after a while, having Minnie around, it's getting a little bit awkward because each new young guest is making her jealous and she's a little bit clingy. Just inconvenient. So he rents a flat some distance away and sends her to live there so that he can be free of distractions.
Oh, yeah.
And so it began. A waitress disappeared from the restaurant in the castle. A stenographer named Jenny Thompson disappeared, and a woman named Evelyn Stewart. Even a male doctor who had rented an office in the castle and was friends with Holmes just vanished. The vault muffled most of the cries and the pounding, but not all of it. When guests were around, he usually would take a quieter approach. He would fill a guest's room with gas and just let them pass in their sleep. Or sometimes he would use a key and then press a chloroform-soaked rag over their face. But he didn't do skeletons for everybody. They were special. He mostly disposed of the bodies in the kiln or the quicklime pits in the basement.
I'm just waiting because there's got to be a body count somewhere.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
So, Sister Anna comes to town, and Holmes won her over with the glamour of the big city and the fair, his devotion to Minnie. They all planned a big trip together to Europe. Everything's going to be great. We're all just going to hang out, the three of us. But before leaving for the trip, he took Anna on a tour of the hotel. Showed her around, like, here's all my businesses on the first floor. Look at all these rooms on the second floor. Oh, hey, wait, we gotta go step by my office for a second. I have some business in there. Oh, hey, Anna, I left some papers in the other room. Could you go get them? And then the door shut behind her. And at first she thought it was a joke. But then, Holmes returned to the apartment. Told Minnie, get ready. Anna's waiting at the castle. 2 days later, Holmes told the landlord he didn't need Minnie's apartment anymore. The mover took a large wooden box, roughly the dimensions of a coffin, and loaded it onto a train. And then a large trunk was sent to the home of the man who made the skeletons.
I wonder what happened.
He made a present of many dresses and hats to his assistant Peitzel's wife and recommended, hey, you should cut them up to make clothing for your three daughters. And he also gave his caretaker a present, two really sturdy trunks with the initials MRW. Dan shakes his head in disbelief.
No, I need you to explain it.
Minnie Williams.
Yeah, I can't remember all the names of all the dead people.
These were Minnie's trunks.
Okay.
So finally, the pressure from creditors and families was just getting to be too much. Holmes set fire to the top floor of his castle and filed an insurance claim.
As one will do.
This was his exit strategy. But the investigator was suspicious and said not to pay the claim unless that guy Campbell, who it was filed under, you know, showed up in person. So he never claimed the insurance money. He left town, tried going to Fort Worth to exploit Minnie's property, where he wanted to set up a similar situation to what he had in Chicago. He brought Peitzel and Peitzel's family, and he took out a life insurance policy on his assistant. All right, do you remember who Peitzel is from my earlier description?
Is he dead?
He's...
Trick question.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Okay. So
everybody from this story is dead because, you know, that's 100 years
ago. It happened a long time
ago. Yeah, makes sense.
So, yes, he is dead. But just to refresh your memory, he was the forger. Holmes helped him get out of prison, like posted his bail or whatever. And he's been working with Holmes this whole time. I just haven't talked much about him because he didn't have a lot to do with the overarching details. But this is the point in the story where he becomes important. Because I told you, Minnie Williams signed her land over to fake Holmes. Holmes signed it over to fake Peitzel. And that's where we're at when he goes to Texas and he wants to start this all over again. He wants to get the land, but he can't quite get it. So he ends up getting picked up for what he claims he faked the death of Peitzel. Just like he normally would with one of his usual schemes. Like he said, oh yeah, you know, I stole a cadaver. It looked like my assistant, Peitzel, and I staged the scene in a house that I rented. I made it look like an explosion, kind of set him on fire a little bit, and then volunteered to identify him.
Why would he say he did all these things?
I don't know. It's a really weird thing, but the punchline is it was Peitzel. It was not a rando. It was the guy. And so the police finally have him for something. They thought they had him for insurance fraud. But what they actually have him for is finally murder. Finally. So once the police figure this out, Chicago police finally go to the Holmes castle. I picture all of them just like knocking the door down and going wild. But they found evidence of dozens and dozens of murder, but it is estimated maybe as high as 200 victims may have met their end at the murder castle. They found the walk-in vault, the gas jets with no function other than to let gas into the vault, the basement, the quicklime, the jars of poison, a rack designed to stretch bodies, surgical tools, bones, clothes, jewelry, hidden chambers. They found out about the skeletons, and they were able to recover some of them so that they could get a proper burial. And here's another weird thing. Not long after, a fire was set to the building one night, destroyed the rest of the secrets that the police hadn't uncovered yet. No one was ever arrested for setting the fire. And that's why we'll never really know how many people. We'll never really know. And that's why it's this big old mystery. And Chicago, as a city, they felt pretty humiliated that their police department knew nothing, like absolutely nothing, about any of these crimes practically under their nose until insurance companies came forward. Even the chief of police had represented Holmes in a bunch of routine commercial lawsuits. They all thought he was this great guy. He was really good at convincing people. The district attorney called Holmes the most dangerous man in the world. Jury found him guilty. He was sentenced to death by hanging. Holmes himself admitted to killing 27 people. But some of the...
the other ones, I never learned their names, so they don't count.
And this is where it's still weird. Like, even those 27, a few of the names he listed were people who are still alive. So, again, we'll really never know how many people he killed in his lifetime because he apparently forgot some of the people he thought about killing that he didn't kill. So he goes to the gallows, platform drops, he is hanged. He struggles for 15 minutes before dying. It's super gruesome. And Holmes himself was afraid someone would steal and mutilate his corpse like he had done to so many other people. So he left instructions that he wanted concrete poured in the coffin, over top of the coffin, everywhere. And an institute in Philadelphia, like, really wanted his brain, and the lawyers are like, nope, nope. So he lies in an unmarked grave. And the famous quote from Holmes, from his memoirs, was, "I was born with the devil in me. I could not help that I was a murderer, no more than a poet can help the inspiration to sing. I was born with the evil one standing as my sponsor beside the bed where I was ushered into the world, and he has been with me ever since." And then it is said that there is a curse, a Holmes curse. This is super weird. After he died, people connected to the case had bad luck. The detective who had investigated became seriously ill. The warden of the prison committed suicide. The jury foreman was electrocuted in a freak accident. And the priest who gave him his last rites was found dead of mysterious causes. Emmeline's father was burned in a boiler explosion, and a fire destroyed the office of the district attorney, leaving only a photograph of Holmes unscathed. Ooh. So that is the creepiest story I can tell you. How you doing?
Yeah, that's really creepy.
Are you going to be all right?
I don't know. I think I need to go watch some My Little Pony or something.
I think we
quickly.
Do.
Quickly. Promptly.
So, I told you the other night I learned something, but I couldn't tell you about it until I was telling you a story. You ready?
No.
Just, no, this is...
No,
this
I'm is, not ready.
It might be good. I found
nothing
out...
Nothing good is coming from this story. Go on.
I found out they're making a movie about this. And then it's coming out next year.
They did. It's called American Psycho.
No.
The updated version.
This one's going to be directed by Martin Scorsese. Guess who's going to play Holmes?
You want me to guess?
You
Leonardo
guess?
DiCaprio.
You guessed right!
Wow. It's like he's done a movie with Martin Scorsese before.
Yeah, it is a pretty easy guess, but I think he's going to do a really good job. I mean, he could charm the pants off anybody, right?
Not mine. These are staying. These are staying home.
You're not going to go in that
these
vault.
These are staying homes.
Like, Leo, I just don't want to test your soundproof vault. I know you're really nice. You're a real charming guy, but I'm just not going to go on the other side of this door and shout for you.
Yep, not doing it.
Nope.
Nope.
Just nope.
Nope.
It's so weird. It was just a different time. Everyone was so polite. Nobody could say anything. He got away with so much just on the time period and being charming. Like, I can't believe how much stuff he didn't pay for along the way, too. It's just the whole thing is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it's true.
It's true.
It's true.
It's true.
And worst story ever.
And that's what makes it the most scary. The other stories I told you were just, you know, flipping made up. A true story is really scary. Would you like a fake story next week? Something fanciful and delightful?
I don't know. Surprise me.
All right. I'll try to find you to finish out Spooktober something that's spooky, but not quite as spooky as this, because I feel like this was our limit for spookiness. I don't think you can take any more. I don't want you to have nightmares.
Okay.
All right.
I don't want nightmares either.
Listeners, sleep well tonight. Everything's going to be just fine. Lock your door. Bye. Thank you for listening to Tale Wagging, a gleeful retelling of little-known fairy tales, folklore, history, and more. If you'd like to get in touch or send us a story you'd like to hear on the podcast, you can find us on our Facebook page, Tale Wagging Podcast, or on Twitter at Tale Wagging Pod. That's TaleWaggingPod. We'd really love it if you could take a moment to please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast anywhere you can. It really helps us get found on this new adventure. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, tweet about it on the interwebs, or send a raven. And if you are under an evil enchantment or have been turned into a creature of some kind, I can't promise listening to the next episode will transform you back, but it might. This is tail wagging. May all your dreams come true.